The party was meant to stay invisible. No press, no shareholders, no questions. An island, a guest list, and a bill that would never arrive at a private mailbox. The money moved quietly, signed off by people who answered to no one but themselves. Inside the company, the numbers did not scream. They whispered, a charge here, an approval there. Expenses labeled as incentives, loans labeled as temporary, everything legal in appearance, everything insulated by authority. Then someone noticed the pattern. Not the party itself, but what it represented. A system where executives approved their own rewards and called it governance. Where oversight existed only when it was convenient. Where trust replaced verification. This was not a story about extravagance. It was about access. About how easily corporate money became personal when controls were circular and consequences distant. The birthday came and went. The wine was finished. The guests left. What remained was a paper trail that refused to disappear and a question that would not stay buried. When does compensation stop being earned and start being taken? Chapter 1. The party that broke the illusion. Tyco International did not look like a company in trouble. From the outside, it looked disciplined, modern, and unstoppable. It had grown through aggressive acquisitions and had become a sprawling conglomerate with interests across security systems, electronics, healthcare products, and industrial services. Analysts praised its reach, investors trusted its numbers, the stock moved with confidence. Inside the company, authority flowed in one direction. Up. Executive power at Tyco was centralized around a small group of senior leaders who controlled not just strategy, but information. Compensation packages were complex by design. Bonuses were layered. Loans were embedded. Perks were written into agreements that few people outside the executive suite fully understood. The board approved structures that rewarded performance, but oversight relied heavily on representations made by the same executives receiving the benefits. Dennis Kozlowski sat at the center of that system. He was not a distant figure. He was present, persuasive, and deeply involved in how the company ran. He spoke fluently about growth and shareholder value. Under his leadership, Tyco expanded rapidly. The results gave him credibility. The credibility gave him latitude. That latitude mattered. Within Tyco, executive compensation was treated as a tool, not a limit. Retention mattered. Loyalty mattered. Performance was rewarded aggressively. Loans were issued to executives under programs that allowed them to borrow large sums at favorable terms. In theory, these loans were meant to align leadership with shareholder interests. In practice, repayment was flexible. Forgiveness was common. Disclosure was minimal. Finance staff processed what came across their desks. Invoices arrived with executive sign-off already attached. Expense categories were broad. Approvals came from people whose authority was rarely questioned. When something looked unusual, explanations followed quickly. Approved compensation, strategic expense, board sanctioned. The birthday celebration did not arrive as a single red flag. It arrived as a series of charges. Travel expenses tied to Sardinia, catering costs that exceeded typical corporate events, art rentals and purchases, lodging that suggested exclusivity rather than business necessity. Each item alone could be justified. Together, they formed something else. The celebration itself was extravagant. An island setting, guests flown in, staff hired for an event that had no clear corporate purpose beyond honoring the chief executive. The scale of the spending was not hidden. It simply was not framed as personal. Company funds covered the costs. Not through theft, in the obvious sense. Through approvals that ran in circles. Executives approved expenses tied to their own benefit. Committees relied on summaries rather than raw detail. The board trusted the system because the system had always delivered results. Inside the finance department, discomfort grew slowly. It did not begin as outrage. It began as confusion. Numbers that did not reconcile cleanly. Charges that did not fit established patterns. Expense codes that felt stretched beyond their intent. No one wanted to be the person who challenged the chief executive over a birthday party. Corporate culture discouraged friction upward. Questioning leadership carried risk. Performance reviews mattered. Careers depended on being seen as team players. So the questions stayed quiet. But quiet does not mean absent. As months passed, the party became shorthand. Not spoken openly, but understood. It represented something larger than celebration. It represented how easily personal indulgence could be processed as corporate expense when authority was concentrated and controls were soft. The illusion that corporate money and personal desire were separate began to fracture. At the board level, information arrived filtered. Compensation committees reviewed summaries. They approved packages based on recommendations from leadership and advisors. The language used was technical and reassuring. Incentive alignment, retention necessity, competitive benchmarks. Few directors saw the granular detail. Fewer still connected individual expenses to the broader pattern of executive benefit extraction. Tyco's growth masked its weaknesses. As long as acquisitions continued and earnings appeared strong, questions remained theoretical. The market rewarded expansion. Internally, that reward translated into freedom. The birthday party was not the largest misuse of funds. It was not even the most expensive single event. But it was symbolic because it was personal. It was not tied to a merger. It was not linked to performance milestones. It existed purely to celebrate one man. That distinction mattered once it was noticed. When internal reviews began, they did not begin with accusations of theft. They began with scope. How much had been spent? Under what authority? With what disclosure? The answers were uncomfortable. Approvals pointed back to beneficiaries. Documentation existed, but independence did not. The system assumed good faith at the top. It was designed to move quickly, not to question intent. The culture at Tyco had normalized executive privilege. Access to corporate funds was treated as an extension of rank. The higher the title, the fewer the barriers. Employees lower in the hierarchy saw fragments of this reality without seeing the whole. A charge processed here, a loan forgiven there, a piece of art transferred. No single person had the full picture until auditors began assembling it. Once assembled, the picture was clear enough to be disturbing. The birthday party became a marker. Before it, excess could be dismissed as aggressive compensation. After it, excess looked like entitlement. Trust began to erode internally. Not loudly, quietly. Finance professionals asked sharper questions. Compliance officers requested documentation that had previously been assumed. The answers grew strained. Externally, nothing changed at first. Investors remained confident. Analysts continued to praise the company. The public narrative stayed intact. That disconnect between appearance and reality defined the moment. The party did not cause the investigation. It exposed the vulnerability that made investigation inevitable. When power proves itself, limits dissolve. When limits dissolve, abuse follows. The illusion that Tyco's success insulated it from scrutiny was already failing. The birthday simply made the failure visible. And once visible, it could not be unseen. Chapter 2. Follow the money, not the explanations. Investigations do not begin with drama. They begin with discipline. Someone asks for documents. Someone else opens a folder. The work is slow and methodical, and it does not care about reputation. At Tyco, the first internal reviews widened quietly. What began as a look at unusual expenses expanded into a broader examination of executive compensation practices. Auditors requested loan agreements. They asked for approval records. They compared what was disclosed to shareholders with what had actually occurred. The gaps appeared quickly. Loans issued to senior executives were substantial. They were framed as retention tools and incentives. The terms favored the borrower. Interest rates were low. Repayment schedules were flexible. Forgiveness clauses existed. In some cases, repayment did not happen at all. What mattered was not only the loans themselves, but how they were handled. Forgiven balances were not consistently disclosed. Shareholders did not receive a clear picture of how much compensation executives were actually taking when loans quietly turned into gifts. Auditors followed the paper trail and found repetition. Loans issued, time passed, balances forgiven. Documentation existed, but justification was thin. Approvals often came from committees populated by people who reported to or worked closely with the beneficiaries. The structure was legal in appearance and compromised in substance. Art purchases opened another door. Works acquired with company funds were recorded as corporate assets. On paper, they belonged to the company. In reality, they hung in private homes. Some were displayed at executive residences. Others were stored in locations unrelated to any business function. When asked, executives described the art as investments, corporate collections, assets that enhanced brand and culture. but usage told a different story. These were personal environments, not offices or public spaces. Real estate followed a similar pattern. Properties were purchased through company channels and justified as business-related. Retreats, meeting spaces, strategic locations. In practice, access was limited. Usage favored executives and their families. Each category alone could be explained. Together, they formed a system. The system relied on complexity. It relied on the assumption that no one would connect the dots. Compensation structures were layered and technical. Disclosure documents were dense. Shareholders received summaries, not raw data. The explanations offered by leadership shifted as scrutiny increased. Early justifications emphasized approval. Everything had been signed off. As that claim weakened, the language moved toward misunderstanding, accounting errors, oversight gaps, no intent to deceive. Intent mattered less than effect. Regulators became involved once internal concerns reached outside the company. Document requests expanded. Interviews followed. Executives were asked to explain how approvals were granted and why disclosure had been limited. The answers were inconsistent. Some pointed to advisors, others pointed to committees. Responsibility moved sideways and upward, never settling. The more questions were asked, the clearer it became that accountability had been diluted by design. Whistleblowers faced pressure. Speaking up inside the company carried risk, careers stalled, relationships strained, but documents spoke regardless of fear. Investigators noticed deliberate structuring. Bonuses were split into smaller amounts to avoid triggering higher review thresholds. Loans were routed through programs with minimal oversight. Expense categories were broad enough to absorb almost anything. This was not chaos, it was convenience. The party that once seemed like an outlier now fit neatly into the pattern. It was extravagant, but it was not unique. It was simply visible. As evidence accumulated, the tone inside the company changed. Executives became guarded. Legal counsel grew more present. Meetings shifted from strategy to defense. Externally, the company still projected confidence. Earnings calls stayed polished. Public statements emphasized cooperation and compliance. The gap between internal reality and public posture widened. For investigators, the focus narrowed. The question was no longer whether money had been misused. It was whether executives had knowingly structured compensation to bypass oversight and disclosure. The distinction mattered legally. Mismanagement carried consequences. Intentional deception carried heavier ones. Documents suggested planning. Not in a dramatic sense. Not through explicit instructions to steal. Through systems that rewarded silence and speed over scrutiny. Boards were not immune to criticism. Directors had relied on information provided by leadership. They had approved compensation frameworks without fully understanding how they were used. Some acknowledged later that they had not asked enough questions. But reliance does not erase responsibility. Shareholders began to react once details emerged publicly. Confidence dropped, stock value suffered. Trust, once lost, did not return easily. The narrative shifted from success to suspicion, from growth to governance failure. The investigation pressed forward because it had to. Too much money had moved, too many approvals pointed inward, too many disclosures were missing. Executives could explain individual decisions. They could not explain the system as a whole. The money trail led to one conclusion. What had been framed as aggressive compensation had crossed into something else. Something that looked less like reward and more like extraction. By the time formal charges came into view, the outcome felt inevitable. Not because of one party or one loan, but because the pattern was undeniable. When oversight becomes optional, abuse becomes predictable. The system at Tyco had allowed that predictability to flourish, and now it was being forced into the open, line by line, document by document. The explanations were running out. Chapter 3. The bill comes due. When the case moved from investigation to prosecution, the tone changed everywhere. Inside the company, conversations stopped being speculative. Outside the company, the language hardened. What had once been framed as questionable governance was now framed as criminal conduct. Prosecutors did not talk about culture. They talked about theft. Their argument was simple. Corporate money belonged to shareholders. Executives were stewards, not owners. Approval did not equal consent when disclosure was withheld and oversight was compromised. Compensation had boundaries. Those boundaries had been crossed. the courtroom stripped away the polish. There were no earnings calls, no strategic visions, only documents, timelines, and signatures. Jurors saw loan agreements and forgiveness records. They saw expense reports tied to personal benefit. They saw how approvals flowed back to the same people receiving the money. The defense leaned on complexity. Corporate compensation is complicated. Large companies move money constantly. Mistakes happen. Intent is difficult to prove. They argued that executives believed they were acting within approved frameworks, that advisors and committees had sanctioned the structures, that lines were blurry. The prosecution pushed back with evidence. Blurry lines do not excuse concealment. Complexity does not erase disclosure requirements. When loans are forgiven and not reported, shareholders are deprived of material information. When corporate funds pay for personal indulgence, it is not compensation. It is taking. Witnesses testified to process. Auditors explained how thresholds were avoided. Regulators explained disclosure standards. Former employees described internal pressure and confusion. Each testimony added weight. The birthday party resurfaced, not as spectacle, but as example. It showed how easily personal benefit could be processed as corporate expense when authority went unchecked. It showed intent not through words, but through repetition. Verdicts arrived after deliberation. The outcome confirmed what investigators had concluded. The conduct was not merely aggressive, it was criminal. Sentencing followed. The trappings of power vanished. There were no yachts, no island celebrations, only a courtroom and consequences that could not be deferred or forgiven. For Tyco, the damage extended beyond individuals. The company's reputation suffered deeply. Investors reassessed trust, markets responded, leadership changed, governance structures were rewritten under pressure rather than foresight. Boards across corporate America paid attention. This was not an isolated failure, it was a warning. Compliance programs were strengthened, disclosure rules tightened, audit committees demanded more independence, loan programs were re-examined, executive perks faced new scrutiny. The lesson was not subtle. Trust without verification invites abuse. Authority without accountability corrodes institutions. The case entered business schools and compliance manuals as a reference point, not because of the dollar amount alone, but because of the mechanism. Power had approved itself. That self-approval had masked extraction. For shareholders, the outcome brought little comfort. Losses could not be undone. Confidence once broken does not return easily. Litigation followed. Settlements attempted to close the chapter. They did not erase the memory. Inside companies, conversations changed. Executives became more cautious. Boards asked harder questions. Auditors gained leverage, not out of moral awakening, but out of risk awareness. The birthday that once symbolized privilege became shorthand for excess unchecked by oversight. It was cited in discussions about fiduciary duty and governance failure. A reminder that personal desire does not become corporate right through repetition. What lingered was not outrage, but clarity. White-collar crime rarely announces itself. It hides in approvals, in language, in complexity. It thrives where scrutiny is discouraged and loyalty is rewarded more than integrity. The Tyco case showed how quickly lines dissolve when systems are built for convenience rather than control. It showed how reputations can shield misconduct until documentation pierces the surface. The party ended years ago. The guests moved on. The island returned to quiet, but the consequences did not fade with distance. They lived on in court records, governance reforms, and careers reshaped by exposure. The final cost was not measured only in money or prison time. It was measured in trust lost and systems rebuilt under duress. Power had treated corporate funds as private resources. The law answered with finality. The bill came due, and it was paid in full.